Did you know that the perfect snack exists that not only has the yum factor, because that's important, but also packs a real protein punch? I'm talking about Wonderful Pistachios, a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids. Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Now that's a snack you can feel really good about. It's hard for me to currently pick a fave because they have several flavors to choose from, including no salt and jalapeno lime options. But if I absolutely had to, I'd say I'm in my no shells, Wonderful Pistachios, sea salt and vinegar era. It's the ultimate snacking solution for when you need a quick, convenient, and tasty boost of pistachio goodness straight out of the bag. Whether you enjoy the ritual of cracking open each nut or you lean towards the ease of no shells, Wonderful Pistachios has something for everyone. It's time to elevate your snacking game with Wonderful Pistachios. Visit wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more.
I didn't feel free to do anything because I was always like worried something was going to happen, or I was always trying to catch up on something over the weekend. Like I just was not I lost myself completely. Like I didn't do anything for fun anymore. I didn't know how to have fun. Like my husband would be like, oh, you want to go for a walk? No. Like I just had this overarching feeling of dread and like not wanting to do anything.
Hey, hey, welcome back to the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast, a show for Black women who are exploring ways to prioritize their wholeness, health, and happiness in a world that does not fully acknowledge our humanity. My name is Bree. I am the host of the show as well as the founder of Brown Girl Self-Care, and I'm also a self-care coach for Black women. I want to go ahead and get into today's episode. You heard a little bit of the clip at the beginning there, a little tease for you. I was in conversation with Brittany Horn, the founder of Revel Wellness Co. If that name sounds familiar to you, it's because Brittany is actually the sponsor for the month of May for Brown Girl Self-Care. And so I've had her ads on the show over the last couple of weeks, and you'll also hear it today as well. And so I wanted to have Brittany on because her story. I want you to know that when it comes to sponsors of the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast, and I was explaining this to Brittany as well, I have people that reach out and they want to sponsor the show, they want to advertise and things like that, but you don't really hear much of that, right? If you do hear that, it's because it was an intentional kind of thing. So I am going to start being more intentional and doing more ads for the show, but it has to be the right fit. It has to be a product that I've used and or someone that I am comfortable with. Like, in other words, I know that they do it for in part for support of Black women, or it's something that is like a health product that I use, or just something along the lines of that. It's not just a random product or person or company that I'm placing here on the show. So I want to make sure that you know that when I do ads, I do them from a place of integrity, because that is what I do and that's what feels right for me. So I just wanted to mention that. But Brittany, again, is the founder of Revel Wellness Co. And today in the episode, she was sharing some things that we're going to touch upon. The 9-to-5. We're going to touch upon how just this quote unquote small act of creativity that she could do with her grandmother tapped into a sense of comfort and consistency with her. And she eventually allowed that to evolve into a business. And we also talk about some of the risks that she took, as well as how for a bit she was just kind of just chasing money, you know, and that didn't quite sit right with her. So we're talking about all of that. Now, one last thing before I get the episode started, I want to let you know, while you will get the meat and potatoes of this episode here on the podcast that you're listening to, the full episode, as well as the actual video so that you can see our discussion as it happens, will be available on Patreon. And I do this because I'm going to keep it real with you, okay? It takes time, energy, and money to continue to keep Brown Girl Self-Care going. I'm a one-woman show. I'm doing it all by myself for now. And so I have to figure out ways to make this sustainable for me. I cannot burn myself out in order to keep Brown Girl Self-Care going. So if you want to support my efforts, if you want to have exclusive content and more things like this, please consider going to patreon.com/browngirlselfcare and support the show in that way. That has been one of the hugest things that I could recommend that will help me to be able to continue doing episodes and creating events and doing things like that, okay? So again, patreon.com/browngirlselfcare. Now, let's go ahead and get into today's episode. The first thing that you will hear is Brittany introducing herself, and then we'll take it from there. I'll see you on the other side.
Yes, so my name is Brittany Horn. I am the founder of Rebel Wellness Co., like you said, where we make jigsaw puzzles and other mindfulness products, really with the goal to encourage Black women to practice self-care and pour into themselves. So helping them create spaces where they're able to do that and pull away from the craziness of everyday life and just have peace, pun intended.
What'd you say? Because it cut off a little bit.
A moment of peace.
A moment of peace with peace puzzle pieces.
Exactly.
I said
pun intended. Yes.
Got it. I love that. So Brittany, I mean, there's so many places to start based on the conversation that we had, but let's kind of just go from the beginning and then we'll work our way to you starting the brand and talking more about the brand and why you found such fascination with like puzzles and how they help you with self-care. But let's go back a little bit and tell me about the Brittany Horn that was in that 9-to-5 life. What was that like for you?
Oh, and I'm trying to think where I started with that because
deep sigh.
I know, because it really, and I'm honestly like coming to more and more realizations like recently of like just how messed up like things were for me or like my thought process going through that entire situation. But I think for me, so like, first of all, when I graduated from college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know where I wanted to go. I kind of told myself, okay, by graduation, if I don't have a job, like I would have gone back home and stayed with my parents until I figured it out. But they had just so happened to move to Texas like my sophomore year. And I'm from Maryland, by the way. And like, I just did not want to go back to Texas. So for background, I went to Drexel University for design and merchandising. And at the time I was like, I'm going to do, you know, fashion merchandising or buying or something like that. I didn't know of any like major companies that were headquartered in Texas. So I was like, well, there's no point in me trying to like figure it out. Cause at that point, my thought process was, okay, I'll either try to like apply to a major retailer headquarters directly, or I will try to work in one of their retail locations as like a sales associate and then kind of work my way up to the corporate environment from there. Because at the time that was all I had heard of. Like those were the two best ways to get into some kind of like retail headquarters. So I was in Philly trying to figure out, okay, either I'll find a job here or I will figure it out. And I happened to have a friend who she had recently moved to Paris with her parents. She went to the university, but then her parents moved and she decided I'm going with them. And I was like,
wait, Paris as in the country?
Yes, as in Paris, France. Yes. Yes.
Because we have a Paris, California. And I was like, wait a minute.
No.
Yes.
So she had moved to Paris, France with her family. And she just happened to mention to me how she had a couple friends there who were from the U.S. but were living in France as au pairs. And I was like, interesting, right? So she like told me about this au pair website where it was like essentially like care.com or match.com where you set up a profile, talk about yourself, and then other families can see who may want to sponsor you. They'll see your profile and like reach out to you. Mm-hmm. I said to myself, okay, I'm just gonna try this and see what happens. Like I set up my profile and I was like, if a Black family contacts me, I'm gonna do it. Like I didn't know it was gonna happen. I didn't think it would, but literally like that next day, a Black family contacted me and I was like, well, I'm going to Paris.
Are you kidding me?
That's kind
this
of
is like... amazing. Okay. Great. So,
fast forward. So I ended up staying in Paris for like about a year. And then I got to go. There's more we can talk about there in terms of like things that I did. But in coming back, I was still trying to figure out what I wanted to do like with my career. And so I was working in retail. I'd worked in retail several times, like throughout high school and college, and like didn't love it. But in my mind, I'm like, this is how I'll get to corporate, whatever. And it just so happened, someone who went to college with me ended up working for Joseph A. Bank. I don't know if you're familiar, but like the men's clothing company.
Mm-mm-mm.
Okay.
So I've heard of it.
Well, yeah, it's, I know it's maybe primarily on the East Coast, maybe.
Okay.
But she just happened to be working there and said that she was being promoted into a new role, and then asked if I was interested in being hired into her previous role. And I was like, yeah, because that just kind of basically like sped past my plan of like, okay, I'm gonna work in this retail store for who knows how long and then try to, you know, work corporate. So that's kind of, that is when my whole corporate journey started. And I will say, like, I had no idea what I was getting into. I pretty much was looking for, like, the security, quote unquote, because there's not really any security working in corporate with layoffs and everything like that. But I was looking for the security of a steady paycheck, the standard 9 to 5 versus, you know, the retail hustle of my schedule changes every week. You know, I don't know what my weekends are going to look like. I'm on my feet all day. I'm dealing with crazy customers. Like, I was just looking for a change in that way. And so from there, I just started to kind of like slowly but surely pick up on the different like politics and microaggressions and stress and wanting to feel seen and have approval from your superiors and your colleagues and like just all this stuff. And I kind of also was dealing with realizing that I was underpaid.
About it.
Because again, going from retail, you know, anything above a retail paycheck and a steady 40-hour a week paycheck was like amazing to me at the time. And then as I kind of like heard of other people who were leaving and getting better jobs and hearing what they were getting paid, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm really not getting paid, right? And so it just so happened that the company was bought out by another company. And so they were letting like 90% of the workers go, and me, myself included. And so at that point I was trying to figure out, okay, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? Do I want to stay in like, you know, fashion, retail, whatever, or do I want to shift? And I ended up changing, you know, because originally my passion and my interest was in like apparel. But the paycheck, I was like, I'm not trying to deal with this. And I'm also not trying to live in New York. I did that for my internship. I'm not, it's not for me. It's not, it's not for me. The New York lifestyle is not for me. So I ended up shifting my interest to be more so geared towards salary. So it came down to like a fashion company and a company that had nothing to do with fashion, but they were paying way more. And it allowed me to stay in the DMV area, whereas the other one, I would have had to move to Jersey. And I was like, I just don't want to do that. So at that point, things kind of shifted for me where it was like, okay, my focus now is getting to the money. Like, I just realized, one, how corporations are structured in terms of your salary, where it's like, if you come in at a certain amount, you're pretty much, you're never going to get where you really want to get, or it's going to take you much longer to get to the salary you're looking for, because you're only going to get like a small percentage increase with each bonus. And then some companies will give you a yearly bonus just because, like a yearly increase, not a lot of them, but some of them will. And then a lot of times when you get promoted, it's like maybe 10 to 15% off of your original
salary. If you're lucky.
Correct. And so I realized, oh, I can make more money job hopping and getting brought in under higher, like higher titles than staying in one company, being loyal to one company and like working my way up. So that became, once I felt like I understood the game in that sense, and that kind of was like my focus and how I kind of jumped around from job to job and industry to industry. And yeah, that's kind of like, I guess the main foundation of how of my story in corporate.
What was the response like from your community, your village?
I will say that it was one of those things where like I'm that person in my family. It's kind of like they were shocked, but also not shocked, because I'm very different from my parents in terms of like the way they think about things, the way they would go about things. Like, they are very much traditional in terms of, you know, try to, you know, work your way, stay loyal to this one company, or like, you know, you go to school, you get a good job, you know, and like, even my degree was beyond their comprehension, like fashion, merchandising, what, like, why not business? Why not a doctor? Why not science? You know what I mean? So I think I had already, like, they were already aware of just how I'm like, I do random things like this.
Not random things. Yeah,
they like don't, I mean, they're of course nervous. Like, and I think my dad's perspective was like, you grown, I don't get it, but you're grown. And then my mom was kind of more nervous. Like, I want to talk to the family. I want to make sure in communication, like, you know, so she was more so nervous, but, you know, they gave me the freedom to do what I want because they trust that I can, you know, take care of myself. So they're definitely hesitant and, you know, concerned. And then my friends are just kind of like, what? What? Are you sure? Not to mention I had like just started a new relationship at the time, but I was not about to let that keep me from going. So
I love that.
Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna go. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So I want to say they were concerned, or I guess like hesitant, but at the same time, like, okay.
I love that. I love that what you were saying for two reasons. The fact that you were like, you even said I had a new relationship, because a lot of times we'll just be like, and you even see it on like TV shows, you know, just got into a relationship, but I have this opportunity, like the kids, like this person got into college A and this person got into college B and they're like across the country. And a lot of times they'll usually have the woman end up following the man across the country, putting her dreams on hold, putting her life on hold, or, in, you know, just putting that person's priorities above her own in the sake of love and relationship and things like that. So I'm honestly, I just feel really proud, even though I didn't have a hand in this at all, but I'm just proud that you were just like, you know what, I'm gonna figure this out, and if it doesn't work out ultimately, it's gonna be okay. All right, so you've gone to Paris, you've had French fries and croissants and all that. I'm just being silly. And so you've made it back and you're in this 9-to-5 environment or corporate American environment, and you're realizing that this, the way this has been laid out for me, this thing is not thanging, and it's not giving what I needed to give, period. And you learned how to kind of navigate that space and what made sense for you, because I'll tell you, I'm from the generation, well, I'm in between the generation, like your generation of beyond is just like, excuse my French, I don't give a fuck. I'm gonna do what I need to do. And then the generations before me was just like, oh my God, I've got to stay here forever. I'm gonna die in this chair. I'm gonna give them the best 65 years of my life or whatever it is. And then I'm gonna retire and get my watch. And then I don't even know who the hell I am, what I like, what I want to do. So now I've got however many years left. I've given them my best years, and now I've got to figure out, now what am I supposed to do? So I'm right in the middle of those two extremes, right? Between, you better keep that good paying job, and you know what? Screw that. I'm going to hop around and get this coin. And that's what it is. Like, I'm in the middle of that. So I was the person that stuck it out, like literally had two corporate America jobs before. So before, in my past, I was like working, you know, Taco Bell, McDonald's, those kind of places. And then I got a corporate America type job or 9-to-5. I was there for literally maybe, let's say 10 years. I don't have the exact years. Same job, 10 years. Then went to my next corporate America 9-to-5 job, and I was there for like 11 years or 10 years or something like that. So literally, and going through this all kind of shenanigans and not feeling complete in myself, not feeling whole, you know, just dealing with different things. And but still just like, I gotta stay here. But inside, literally just like dying, like feeling like I was just dying, like if mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, just like crispy, like burnt, crispy, burnt, fried, just like, and I'm joking because it is funny, but seriously, like that's just how I felt, like going to work, crying in the parking lot, crying on the way to work, like for days, weeks, months. As soon as I'm stepping into the place, just like my soul just like left my body and was like, sis, I will see you at 4:30 p.m. Come and pick me up in the car, because that's where I'm going to be. And I'm literally like leaving my soul in the car and going into this job. And so I'm wearing my F the Cubicle shirt.
Nice.
By the way, which I started that brand like maybe 10 years ago or whatever it was. And that's why I'm saying I was at both extremes, because in 2019, I quit my job. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I cannot. I literally, like, my body said no. Mm-hmm. I cannot do this, not another damn day.
So I have not been in that environment since 2019. And I can tell you, it has not been easy. It has not. I have to say this for the people in the back. I'll say it again into the microphone. I'll whisper it. It has not been easy. It hasn't. That's just what it is. It hasn't been easy. But even though I'm going through some things, I can say that at minimum, for the most part, my spirit feels more intact. Even though I'm facing all these challenges of trying to make this sustainable as I try to support this community that we're growing. So I was smack dab in the middle of both of those extremes. So I want to hear from you, like, what was the deciding factor for you? What was that pivotal, and I'm sure you had several, but what was that, like, that main, like, the straw that broke the camel's back? And you were like, you know what? Nah, I can't do this. And then also tell me, like, what led you to starting Revel Wellness?
Literally, as I'm listening to your story and, like, when you decided you had enough is enough, like, all those feelings of me and that day came back, and it was, like, the same thing. And, like, going back to what you were saying when we first started the episode about how, you know, we a lot of times we feel alone and that we're the only ones and that we, you know, other people, like, we're afraid to share our stories because we don't realize that other people are going through the same thing. Like, I'm still kind of dealing with that too. And I want to say thank you for seeing a need for me to share my story, because a lot of times I feel like, no, it won't help anybody, or like no one cares. And even if people don't care, like I just feel like, for me, it's one of those things where I just feel there's not shame, but just kind of like, oh, we don't talk about this kind of stuff. Right. But I'll say for me, there was a lot that went into my moment of enough is enough. And I'll preface this by saying that I didn't quit corporate America with the idea that I would never go back. I literally quit because I knew that I was about to break and I didn't think I'd be able to recover from it. Mm. And I knew that I just needed to do something different. And I felt trapped. Like, for years, I felt this overarching feeling of, you know, I want to escape. I want to get away, and not really knowing what that meant. Like, I knew I liked to travel, obviously, but so that for me was like my escape, right? It's like going to different places. And then when the pandemic happened and like, I can't go anywhere and I'm stuck, and like I just felt this, just, I was being pulled down. And going back a bit, so when was it, 2020, I made the biggest shift in my corporate career by going into the tech industry. And number one, I was super excited because I'm like, oh, this is where the money is. I was like, I have finally figured it out. Like I was so proud of myself. I was like, because I'm the kind of person, I plan out years in advance. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna stay here for this amount of time, build up a resume, then I'm gonna try to jump over here, see if I can get them to give me this amount of a raise, you know, on top of my current. Like, it was, I had a system, right? And so when this job came along, I was like, oh, you just cut my plan in half. You know what I mean? I don't even have to do as much as I thought I was going to have to do. So I jumped at the opportunity, and like, knowing that I didn't know anything about tech, but, you know, the person that I was talking to saw something in me, and she said, you know, I don't think people have to have necessarily the experience. They just have to have the mindset to be able to get in there and figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I felt like this person had my back. She believed in me. I'm like, let's just see what happens. I get there and it is a world, like a whole different world for me from what I've ever experienced, in that in previous roles, there was a lot of passive aggressive, you know, incidents that, you know, don't make you feel too great, but at the same time, it's not in your face. And so you're able to kind of ignore it sometimes. This was the first environment. Keep in mind, this was right at peak pandemic when the shutdowns just happened. I literally never stepped in the building. Like, I worked there for, I think, a year and a half, all from home, completely new industry, new people, like trying to figure things out all from home. And people were just so rude and aggressive and mean and accusatory. And I felt like I was in high school, because they would talk about you behind your back. And then all of a sudden I would get calls from my boss, like, so-and-so said you did this. What do you need to tell me what's wrong? And I'm like, excuse me? Like, and then I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, give me an example. I can't give you an example. Oh, well, who said it? I don't feel comfortable telling you. So now my head is spinning, trying to go back to figure out, well, what the hell did I say? What did I do? Mm-hmm. I'm like going back, and it creates this inner.
Hey girl, it's me, Bree, popping in to remind you that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In honor of protecting my peace and mental health this month, I will not be hashtag booked and busy. Instead, your girl is going to be doing things that spark peace, joy, and creativity. Things like puzzles. I enjoy doing puzzles because they give me time to put my worries down and instead lean into rest and relaxation as I refill my self-care cup so that I can give from a place of overflow. Enter Revel Wellness Company. Revel Wellness Company is a small, Black-owned puzzle company whose mission is to elevate the well-being of Black women. Their puzzles feature curated collections from dope Black female artists that are beautiful works of art you can frame once you're done and then use for home decor. For a limited time, Revel Wellness Company is offering 15% off to all the Brown Girl Self-Care listeners. Go to www.rvlwellnessco.com and enter code BGSC15 at checkout for 15% off your first order of a self-care puzzle. Again, that's rvlwellnessco.com and enter code BGSC15 at checkout for 15% off your first order of a self-care puzzle.
A lack of trust within myself to where now I'm questioning everything I do, everything I say, to the point where I have no trust in myself. I'm constantly seeking some sort of validation, some sort of like approval, and also feeling like I'm never going to get it. You know what I mean? And it really, really broke me. And honestly, I would have quit this particular role. However, I had just moved to Charlotte, North Carolina from Maryland. And I had moved here with the intentions of, you know, buying my first home, you know, having children, like growing my roots. Like this, as a person who was a nomad and never found a place that felt like home, like Charlotte was the first place I visited that felt like home. And I was like, all right, I just felt called to be here for some reason. And it took some time, but like eventually I made it down here. And so I had bought my first house. We got in there really good time because now the housing industry is ridiculous. Or the housing market, but like we were under contract, me and my husband were under contract for our first home, and I was terrified that if I quit, I may lose my loan, or, you know, something would happen and it would fall through. And I was like, I have worked too hard, I've saved too much, I've sacrificed too much for this house. It's my house. I don't want to lose it. And that was the only thing that kept me there. Mm-hmm. But when I tell you, it was one of the hardest times of my life, because I would literally like, so at the time, working from home, no one was set up to really work from home. So I just kind of had like a desk next to my bed. I would literally roll out of bed super early in the morning, not even like brush my teeth and eat something before I was on my laptop, trying to get a head start on the day, trying to get ahead of things that I knew were probably going to blow up that day, because literally every day something was going wrong, every day. And knowing that, like waking up, knowing that something like bracing myself for something to go wrong, it was horrible. Like there were times where I wouldn't think about eating. I wouldn't leave my chair except to go to the bathroom. And even that I would put off as long as possible. Like I had meetings back to back to back to back to back. Like there was just no time or space. Like thank God for my husband, who would be able to just come in and just like leave a plate of food on my desk and then, you know, walk out. And I'm just like, oh, there's food here. Like not even like seeing, you know, what's happening. There were times like, and I would cry. Mm-hmm. Like there were so many days where I would like get out of a meeting and then just like roll over onto my bed and just weep, because I was so miserable. Like just dealing with people who had no like sense of compassion, didn't care that I was new, just like I was literally a scapegoat. Like people, and I saw it as time went on, how like when other new people would join, they would kind of use them as a scapegoat too for other reasons. But like I could just see how things were blowing up all over the place and they needed someone to blame. Like the culture there was very much, this is going wrong, whose fault is it? So they can get yelled at by superiors. Like that was the whole thing.
Black representation in media matters.
When we see people that look like us or share our experiences, it provides a sense of community, validation, and belonging while also resisting the narrative that we must remain silent and invisible. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR, where you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, and empowerment. One episode that I really enjoyed was titled, In Serena Williams, A Generation of Black Players Saw a Legend Who Looked Like Me. The way they wove the episode together with interviews, storytelling, and music kept my interest because it felt more like a documentary than a typical news piece. This is what it feels like to me to have our stories centered. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country we reflect. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. My hair is kinky, it's coily, it's beautiful, it's all the things, but the dryness is real, so it's also prone to feeling parched. This is why Waze Anti-Frizz Cream is my new BFF. It not only tames frizz, but helps my hair feel more hydrated. Listen, summer is coming. We are trying to be outside, going to brunch, plus traveling, and summer activities aren't always kind to our strands, okay? So let me tell you what I do for this. I wash my hair every 1 to 2 weeks. Don't sleep on Waze Detox Shampoo, by the way, if you have hard water or buildup. I detangle, I smooth in a little of the Waze Anti-Frizz Cream, then shingle in my natural gel. My hair is frizz-free, it's hydrated, and it's cute for days. Love sleek styles? Waze Anti-Frizz Cream works as a heat protectant up to 450 degrees as well. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code SELFCARE for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code SELFCARE.
So thank God, someone new joined my team who was like my senior, and I call her like my sweet baby angel because she legit like saw me struggling and just like kind of swooped me up under her wing and took the time to explain things to me, to just tell me like, hey, like this is how things work. I see this is your approach. Like, let me give you some tips on how to go about this. Like literally like, and it's, and to give you some like other background. So basically like I would have one-on-ones with my boss where she would be just downright cutthroat in terms of like, you're not performing the way I need you to perform. Like, you need to figure it out. Mm-hmm. What do you need from me? And I'm like, well, I need you to kind of help me break. Like, she would always say, I'm here if you need help. But then when I would go to her for help, her realm of assistance was like within these three boxes. If it didn't fit like these quick check the box type things, she wasn't going to be able to help me, and she just expected me to figure it out. And so again, me feeling this internal pressure of like, oh, she took a chance on me, she believes in me, I can't let her down, like I gotta figure this out, like all this stuff. Thank God this other person came in, and she actually was like a mentor, a guy like who helped me. So I had a meeting with my boss where she was just like, you need to connect the dots. Just connect the dots. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know what the dots are at this point. Like, I can't identify dots to even begin to connect them. And then even when I do see dots, like, you know, like with most connected dots, like they're numbered. Like there's an order.
Right. There's an order.
Yeah. You're essentially just shoving a bunch of dots in my face and expecting me to figure out what the picture is. And I have no idea because there's no order. Mm-hmm. This person came in and she helped me connect the dots. And so she would literally sit with me, like we'd be on the phone, like on Teams meetings, like at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, like she would stay up late with me, get up early with me. Like she was in my corner so heavy. Like if it was not for her, I don't think I would have made it. Like I really don't think I would have made it. But she was able to help build me up to where like I knew what I was doing and I was good at it. And those same people who were extremely rude to me, who were talking to me behind my back, who were criticizing me, they all came back and ate their words. Like, as I was leaving, they all were just like, you know, like, I'm sorry I gave you such a hard time, but you really have done a great job. And like, you're such a great, you know, and I'm just like, mm-hmm. Oh, thanks. You know what I mean? No thanks to you, right? So that's one thing. So I ended up leaving and trying to go to another company in another tech role. And at the time, I knew I didn't love tech. Like, I knew it wasn't something I was passionate about. But again, in my mind, I'm going for the money, right? I'm like, who cares if I like the job? I like the paycheck, right? So I'll suck it up.
I was going to ask you, why, if you knew this, you weren't, tech wasn't for you, what motivated you to keep going? And literally, it was just the money.
It was just the money, because in my mind, I felt like that was always important. In my mind, this is what everyone, because when you get in the corporate environment as well, I didn't realize until I left the first company, all of a sudden I was in this new world of, it was more competitive. Mm-hmm. Like, people would talk about, they were very much more flashy and, talking about the things that they had and the places they lived, especially in the DMV area, I'm over on this side in this apartment and I do these things on the weekend and, I just got it in my mind that I had to reach a certain level by a certain age, otherwise I was inadequate. And so I was trying to force myself to get to this place. And honestly, growing up, I didn't have a lot of things that I was passionate about in terms of a career. There wasn't anything from day one, I knew I was going to do this or I really wanted to do that. It was just kind of oh, this seems cool. I really couldn't figure it out. And so that's another reason why, I was I don't really have anything I'm drawn to, but I do the paycheck. So I'll continue this way. And so, going back to that feeling of still feeling trapped and that I didn't know what I wanted, because before I left that one and went to another one, I did try to figure out what else could I do? I was definitely talking to my therapist heavy, I don't know what I want. I feel like I've reached a certain level to where I don't even know where I could go. I feel like if I were to shift, I'd have to start over completely. Mm-hmm. And that is something else in corporate America. It's just a subconscious thing where it's you never go back. You can never take a step down. Otherwise, your peers are going to be looking down on you and think you're inadequate or think you're, stupid or couldn't handle it. And so that feeling, that pressure, internal pressure I had on myself to not shift or start over is also what kept me just keep moving forward, always forward and up and onward, all that good stuff.
To your detriment.
Exactly. And I even I talked to a career coach and she was no help. I was expecting when I talked to her for her to be able to actually give me examples of potential careers that made sense, that would let me carry over some of my skill set from previous roles, but translate them to something that I actually cared about. She did not do that. She essentially was just like, well, what did you like about your last job? What did you not like about your last jobs? Okay, take that and find a new job. And it's like, lady, I've been knew what I liked and didn't like. The problem is I don't know what careers are out there. I've been so tunnel vision, in this space for so long, I have no idea. And I did all these personality tests and job tests. And it's just I couldn't figure it out. And so I was like, all right, this will be the next one. I'll try it out. Maybe it'll be better. Maybe my experience was this bad because of the company that I was at. That's what's in my head. So I get to this next place and I should have seen the red flags just in the whole hiring process. There was a lot of ambiguity in terms of what my role was, what my, products were that I was managing, who I'll be working with, my team, everything was just kind of ambiguous. But I was like, well, everyone seems nice. And the person who hired me seemed like she had my back. So I was like, I'll give it a shot. Mm-hmm. I get there. And of course, 3 months after I'm there, the person who hired me ends up leaving to go to another job, another company. And so I never had a true onboarding process. I wasn't even working in a steady schedule or whatever, because things would change every other day and not, it didn't seem like it was working towards, the company itself was just completely unorganized. And it was a smaller company trying to figure out how to be a bigger, how to do things the same way bigger companies would. But they were still just in a shit show trying to figure it out. And I'm just like, I don't know what's happening. But I'm just here. I'm doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing. But then I just started noticing, and it took a while for me to put two and two together, but I just started realizing the new boss that I had, I just assumed that she realized that I had been in this weird, ambiguous place. And I expected her to kind of get me to that point of where I had a steady stream of work, steady process or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I would have one-on-ones with her weekly. And everything seemed fine. She didn't have any complaints. She didn't say anything, that would make me think that I'm doing anything wrong.
Right.
then I started noticing a couple times after, like shortly after our one-on-ones, our director would call me. And, you know, he's the kind of person, he kind of talks in circles. He's really fast. He talks all over the place. He's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, and, you know, Sue says she has concerns. I'm like, I get it. Like, you should be running this initiative. And I'm like, okay. Like, because at the time, I'm just like, that's fine. If she wants me to do this, I'll do it. Like, I didn't realize I was supposed to, you know what I mean? And then it happened again later on where he had said similar, like, he never came out and said, like, you're underperforming. He just said, like, yeah, like, I think here's some tips on how to, like, you know, be better with your manager. And I'm like, why are you giving me?
Where's this coming from?
Yeah, because when I literally talk to her every single week and she's not telling me anything.
Right.
Lo and behold, so my 6-month review comes up. And keep in mind, like, since starting, like, I've now changed 2 managers, haven't had a steady workflow, haven't had a steady team that I'm used to working with. Like, everything is just all over the place. I honestly feel like she, like, Birdman rubbed your hands before that.
Because the way
she started that meeting where she was like, okay, you're not doing this, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. I would expect you at your level to be doing this and you're not doing this. Wow. And she had like this list. And I'm like, honestly taken aback. Like, I was confused. Like, that's how much it's caught me off guard. Cause I'm like, and I said to her, I'm like, where is all this coming from? Mm-hmm. Like, literally, like, we've talked and I've said to you, you know, if you think I could be improving this way or that way, like, let me know. And she's like, yeah, okay. And so when she waited to, like, tell me during my review, I was like, I went through so many emotions. I went through one, that feeling of, again, I started having PTSD of, like, going back to that last role where I felt inadequate, where I felt like I wasn't doing things right, but didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. And, like, people were talking about me behind my back. And this time it was my boss. You know what I mean? Like, as harsh as my last boss was, at least if I was doing something wrong, she let me know. Like, she let me know instantly. So that way I at least knew I should be trying to figure stuff out. This woman wouldn't tell me and waited until it was time for a review and would tell other people. And I'm like, this person does not want me to succeed. Like, this person does not care if I succeed. This person has no stake or investment into my future within this company. This person mm-hmm. is ready for me to go if I so choose. Like, she's ready to see me fall, basically. Mm. And so again, I went back to that place of questioning my thought process, questioning my decisions, because it was literally like the rug had been ripped from underneath me, where it was like, I'm going through day to day thinking I'm doing fine. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, you're doing horribly, you know? And that really messed with my head. That messed me up so bad. I started having like mini panic attacks. I would be like literally just like sitting down and like, I you know, when you're walking and sometimes your knee gives out all of a sudden, like that feeling of like, oh, I'm about to fall. Like that would happen to me every day constantly, to where I would close my eyes and take a deep breath and I'd be like, it was awful. And like, I just was trying to figure out like, okay, Brittany, are you going to go back to what you did the last time and try to like figure it all out and no sleep and, you know, just doing everything. And I tried for a little bit. I tried. But then I realized, like, no, like, it's not worth it to me, right? Like, I felt like I had lost control and I had to put myself first and take more control of my life and remember that, like, I told myself last time, I was like, I will never let this happen to me again. Like, because at this point, I had my house. I have everything I want. Like, losing this job, it's not going to keep me from getting another one. I knew that much. You know what I mean? So I was just like, I don't need to be here with someone who clearly does not care about me at all as her employee. Like, I would think as a manager, you at least want, like, if your team looks good, you look good. Mm-hmm. This person really takes no accountability for her team, because she's like, if she's allowing her team to look bad and is also talking bad about her team to her superior. So she clearly does not care. Mm-mm. And going back to those red flags again, like, I remember when I first started, like, I would have one-on-ones with people trying to get to, like, you know, introduce myself, and I could just feel this overall sense of dread from certain people where, like, they weren't enthusiastic. They were like, oh, you know, got all this stuff I'm doing, da da da. Like, I could just sense that from them. Mm-hmm. But again, I was like, you know, I'll wait and see what happens to me. Nothing's happening over here, so I would just ignore it. And mm-hmm. I would talk to my boss, the first one, and I'd say, hey, like, should I be concerned? And she's like, no, you know, we're making changes, like we're shifting, da, da, da. And I'm like, okay. Next thing you know, someone just quit. Oh, so someone just quit. What's, yeah, you know, they just weren't able to do their job effectively. Like, you know, they just had to go somewhere else and leave us with all this stuff. And I'm like, huh, okay. Then a month or two later, someone else ups and leaves. And it's like, yeah, so what's up with it? Well, that person just wasn't listening. And like, I told them not to do this and they just kept doing this and they wanted to do things their way. So they decided to leave. And I said, okay, like making mental notes, but again, not positioning it to see that that would eventually happen to me. So again, and I say all this to say, like, this is all kind of what helped make me get to that point where I was like, I am no longer doing this, or at least not here. Like, I need to, I'm going to break, and I do not think I can, I don't think I'm strong enough to build myself back up, or I don't want to have to be strong enough to build myself back up from another breakdown. Like, I just want to leave before it gets any worse. And that is what I did.
Yeah. So now you're in this place where you're just like, okay, I've gone through all the things and I'm just completely over it. Like, I'm just over it. So where does Revel Wellness Co. come in?
Yes. So Revel Wellness Co. came in at the second to last job. So the first tech job that I had, where I was extremely depressed, not knowing what I wanted to do, not losing my sanity, losing my sense of self. I was really like working hard with my therapist to figure out like what, like we're just trying to work through it, work through all of it. And it happened around the time when that one coworker came in and was starting to help me figure things out. And I also had gotten a new manager who was way more helpful, who was able to, like, you know, have my back in ways that were super like beneficial and reassuring to me. So I was on an uptick. I was on an upswing, right? Where I was like finally in more control of things happening. I knew what was going on. I was figuring it out. Like, I had built myself up, right? For years, I had wanted to start a business, but I never knew what I wanted it to be. And I never felt confident enough to really follow through with it. And this again goes back to like, for everyone who doesn't know, like, I am a serious mental health advocate. Like, I recommend everyone go to therapy, like absolutely everyone. I've helped everyone in my family who would listen, find therapists. And I tell all my friends. And it's like, because for me, I have never had more of a sense of clarity than I did when going to therapy. Like, you know, growing up, just feeling so lost in terms of not really knowing who I was or what I wanted or why I felt a certain way. I've been able to kind of work through that in therapy. And so, you know, my therapist was really helpful in helping me realize that I am capable of doing more than what I thought I was. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I had friends who were encouraging me to do different things. And so what happened was one day I was literally just kind of like dealing with, you know, all those pressures of work and feeling like I was lost and like struggling to really to get back to myself, because work, I like ate, slept, dreamt about work. Like, tech is at least in my particular role, like, or what I've seen, it's, you don't just like clock out and work is done. Like, you are essentially on call every single day, because if a system goes down, somebody's got to fix it. And you have to be the person making sure it gets fixed, and you never know when it's going to happen. So that like constant anxiety, like, what's going to go wrong? When's it going to happen? Like, I didn't feel free to do anything, because I was always like worried something was going to happen, or I was always trying to catch up on something over the weekend. Like, I just was not I lost myself completely. Like, I didn't do anything for fun anymore. I didn't know how to have fun. Like, my husband would be like, oh, you want to go for a walk? No. Like, I just had this overarching feeling of dread and like not wanting to do anything. And so I was just like trying to figure out like, well, I can't be the, I'm just thinking like, I can't be the only person, you know, struggling with just the pandemic alone, but also just like wanting to do something at home, right? And so I just started researching like, what were people doing, you know, because the pandemic or being stressed out. And I saw that people were puzzling. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, that makes sense. Like, it was something I kind of resonated with really quickly, because I used to do puzzles with my grandmother as a kid. And it's something that she still does to this day. Like, she has her own puzzle room full of puzzles that she does. Like, it is like a signature, like literally the first thing I think of when I think of my grandma. And she's been doing it like literally like as long as I can remember. So it made sense on that level. I had the personal connection to it. And so I started trying it myself. Like I started ordering all these different puzzles from different puzzle companies. I was trying them out and I was noticing like things that I liked about certain puzzles, things that I didn't like. And as I started doing them more and more, I was like, oh, like this is, it became addictive for me. Like I was like, oh, I really enjoy this. Like I would get excited the next time I got a new puzzle in the mail and like I would get to open it up and start putting it together. Like it became my me time. It became my time to like, it gave me something to look forward to finally, which I hadn't had in such a long time because I was just so overwhelmed with work. It was finally something that now, like, I am excited to do this. Like, I'm still not, I wasn't comfortable going out the house that much because it was still peak pandemic, which I guess I feel like the pandemic has always been at peak. We just kid ourselves to say that it's going up and down. But like, at the time I was like, I'm not trying to go out. And also keep in mind, like I was new to Charlotte, so I hadn't really established like a community here either before the pandemic. And so like, it just kind of gave me something to do. So from there, I started trying to think, like, I don't see, like in choosing the different puzzles that were available, I'm like, I don't see a whole lot of images that I necessarily connect to on a personal level. Like there's not a lot of Black people on these puzzles. Like the imagery isn't something that I relate to. Like they're pretty, but I don't necessarily relate to it. And that's kind of what got my head spinning in terms of like, okay, like, well, what if I changed that? Like, what if I did something that I could relate to that I would like? Because another thing too, for me personally, when it comes to puzzles, I always initially pick a puzzle based on like, would I hang this up as artwork? Like, that's like in my head. It's like, would I hang this up in my room? No. Okay, keep it moving. Like, because for me, when it comes to puzzles, like I put a lot of time into putting, like I'm a slow puzzler. Like I don't just get a puzzle done in one day. Like it takes me a couple weeks, couple months sometimes. And the idea of breaking it all apart when it's done is like, no, like I just
spent 15 days putting this thing together.
I can tear it down in 20 seconds. Right, in 20 seconds. So me, I always want to like, it's like an extension of the experience too, because it's like, okay, you put in that last piece, it's like, oh, look what I accomplished, right? Like, it's a serious, like, you know, mood booster and, like, just kind of confidence boost to be like, look what, like, I did this. Like, I put all this together, like, by myself, I did it. Like, so framing it afterwards and hanging it up is, like, an extension of that whole experience that I found. So I would literally, like, buy frames, like, as I was getting closer to being done with them. Like, it was like a ritual for me, honestly. Mm-hmm. And, but again, going back to realizing like there wasn't a whole lot of images that I really connected with. And so I just started researching like how to start a puzzle company. Like what would I do? What would my, you know, niche be? Like, what would I try to, like, how would I try to make it different for others? And something that I noticed, like, as I'm realizing, number one, like, okay, I can try to have more modern imagery that people my age, people who look like me, who maybe have a similar experience as me could connect with. I also was realizing like, you know, when I first started, I think the first one I got was like a 500 piece puzzle. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling overwhelmed when I first opened it, because I was like, a lot of pieces here. And you kind of don't know where to start. You know, you're like, okay. So it's a little overwhelming when you first do it, but I was determined, right? I'm like, all right, I'm just going to do it. Start with the edges as usual, like work my way up. And so when I was thinking about how I would try to make things different, I realized like, I'm sure there's other people out there who think to themselves, like, I don't have time to do a puzzle. It's too much, too many pieces, too much work. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I was like, well, how can I make it more accessible to people to where, you know, you don't have to start with a 500 piece puzzle. So that's where the idea of like the lower piece count comes into play. Because for me, not only did I want to provide like number one, positive imagery of Black people, Black community, like something to just kind of spark joy, but also I didn't want people to be afraid to try it. Like, because in my mind, you don't have to have a lot of time. Like if you just want like a mini wellness break, like just something to just like on your lunch break, like, or just like in between, you're really busy, but you just need that moment to yourself, like have a 48 piece puzzle for you that you could get done in one lunch break or not. Like, it depends on how much you want to put into it. But like, I wanted to encourage people to experience the same sense of joy and like the same sense of like, okay, like this helps me disconnect from everything else and reconnect with myself with this activity. So that's kind of how it all started.
I love that. And I was going to ask you, going back to when you went to your grandmother's house, and she had the room of puzzles, mm-hmm. her puzzle room. I can totally see it. I can even smell it. It probably smelled like cocoa butter and puzzle wood pieces, leather and. Yeah. But, what if you could sum up the feeling in one word of your time that you spent with your grandmother in that room doing puzzles with her, like in one or two words, like what would that be?
It's interesting to think, because thinking back on it, like, and this is something I had spoken to someone else with, because they asked me, like, did your grandma ever tell you why she puzzled? And I'm like, no. Like, we never really talked about the why. It was just mm-hmm. kind of like, this is what grandma does. And if I'm here, I'm doing it with her. And that's just a thing. But like, if thinking back on it, I do remember it being just kind of like a sense of like calm and a sense of normalcy. Mm-hmm. Like having that thing that was kind of like a staple or like a constant where it's like, if I go to grandma's house, I know there's going to be a new puzzle on this table. And I know that if I ask her, she will do it with me. Oh. So just having that sense of like, this is, you know, because especially as kids, like you need consistency, you need structure. Mm-hmm. And so I do know that just having that staple or that connection with her, I don't think I realized it at the time, but looking back on it, I can see how that sense of normalcy, being able to go over and just know what to expect in that sense mm-hmm. was good for me.
I love that. It sounds like that was just like a safe space.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to grandmama's house. Mm-hmm. You probably make your little snack and you just go, you're in this, it's almost like a really sacred space, or just, I don't even know, just this refuge, you know what I mean? You've dealt with different things at school, you know how school can be kind of rough, and mm-hmm. you just go there and you just have this calming environment where there's, you know, I'm assuming like no fussing, and just that the outside world is just left outside, and it's kind of like you just have this little, like I said, refuge or whatever, where you can go. And I love that you said it provided a sense of like normalcy, because I feel like that's something that was lacking for a lot of us, like in our childhoods and in our young adulthoods, you know, just having that sense of routine and normalcy. Yeah. So I love that. I love that. So now you have your beautiful puzzles and you're building this brand out. Is that kind of like the sense, is that what you want to bring to the users? Just like this normalcy and joy that you experienced when you were like a kid?
It's more of, it's yes and no. It's kind of twofold. It's like, I want people to, because I feel like a lot of times we only associate puzzles with those childhood experiences. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, I did this as I was a kid, or like my kids do this. It's like a thing for kids, right? But I don't think we realize the mental health benefits that are connected to it. Like going back to that why, we don't realize why this is a good thing for kids to do, or like our grandparents to do. Like, and so I think as millennials or like the generations in between, we kind of don't see ourselves in that mix. Like it doesn't seem like a product for us that would really benefit us. And so for me, I want to help people, one, tap back into that, those feelings of when you were a kid, and just kind of like having that sense of, you know, you're not really worried about too much, you know, as a kid, like, you're just kind of like, oh, like, this is the thing that I'm doing. But I want you to also realize, like, this is a positive, like a positive activity that was going to help you decompress. It's going to help you feel good, feel better. And it's also going to help you pour back into yourself. So a lot of times, like going back to the accessibility, like having those smaller piece counts, I look at it as like an entry point, right? To someone who may be hesitant or like only has one view of a puzzle, it's like, oh, all these pieces, my grandma does this, like it's not for me. Like, so I have the smaller piece counts to help you if you're afraid or hesitant to do too many. I also pick artwork that I feel like we can connect to, like on a personal level. So that's why you see every single artwork that I choose, I had felt some type of emotion or connectivity to it in some way, whether it be, you know, the colors made me happy, like the hairstyles, like I felt like I saw myself in the artwork, whatever they were doing in the artwork, like my brunch puzzle, like that one just makes me think I'm going to a spa, you know what I mean, or a really nice hotel, and I'm just in my robe, you know, just relaxing, like it makes me feel good to look at it. And a lot of times I feel like we are conditioned to feel like self-care is like going to a spa or going on vacation or getting our nails done, and these things are nice. But like, they don't necessarily, like there's been plenty of times I've gone to a spa and could not relax because my mind was spinning on either like what happened the day before, what I have to do after, you know, like emails I got to get back to, or just like, you know, because I'm so used to running around in my mind all day thinking of all these different things, I get into a spot, I'm like almost freaking out because I'm just like having all these thoughts and I can't even enjoy what's happening. You know what I mean? And so one, it's expensive as well. So like we may not always be able to afford to go to a spa whenever we're stressed out. But mm-hmm. a puzzle is something where it's affordable. It's something you can do in your own time. You don't have to go nowhere. You can just open it up and it forces you to focus on something else. And it kind of takes your mind to a different place. Because mm-hmm. if you're going to get it done, like you really can't just be thinking about a bunch of other stuff. Like you're seeking out these pieces, mm-hmm. you're putting them together, and you're also releasing dopamine every time you do. So it's like, you're already kind of like boosting your mood. Like it's kind of like meditation. Like you're in a meditative state where you're just focused on this one thing and nothing else. And I just wanted to show Black women specifically like that this is an option that I don't think we realize. And so that's kind of my whole goal is to just say like, hey sis, try this. Like just try it. Just try it. You may like it's different. Like it's something you may not have thought of before. And that's something that could help you. You know what I mean? Like going back to my experience and like just thinking of how excited I was and like having that thing to look forward to and being able to slowly start to connect and to myself and disconnect from like the stress of work that I hadn't been able to do that in over a year. You know what I mean? At this point, I just wanted to be able to do that for other people.
I love that. So as we wrap up, Brittany, I just want to, first of all, give you a moment to let the people that are watching this video or listening to the sound of our voices on the podcast, like, where can they find you? How can they support you? Where can we find you online? Give us all the deets.
Yes. So you can find us online at revelwellnessco.com. Revel is spelled R-V-L wellnessco.com. Same with social media at Revel Wellness Co, R-V-L Wellness Co. That's on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. We're also doing some fundraising right now, crowdfunding, trying to grow and expand the business. I want to be able to work with more artists. I want to be able to grow this brand and be able to reach more Black women, be able to teach more Black women about the benefits, and it takes money. So all the support is appreciated. If you believe in the mission, which is just to help bring accessible self-care to Black women, that your help would be amazing.
All right, and I'm back. What did you think about today's episode? I know that I will be taking away really big parts of the conversation with me, including just remembering that it is okay for me to take a chance on myself, to take a risk and take a chance and see what happens. I'd love to hear your takeaway, so feel free to email me at connect@browngirlselfcare.com and let me know what you thought. Now, two things, okay? Number one, the first announcement is for the month of June, we're going to have our Soul Care Sunday again. However, this month we're going to be doing a puzzle and sip event. Yes, you have heard that right. We are going to tap into our creativity this time and we are going to put a puzzle together. One of Brittany's puzzles. So if you'd like to participate, if you know you have been missing like that sense of community, you've been going around feeling isolated, you haven't been able to connect with other Black women, you just want to feel seen and feel supported and also refill your self-care cup and do it in a safe space, this is the event for you. It's going to be fun. So go ahead and go to browngirlselfcare.com, click on the events button, okay, and go ahead and hold your space and purchase your puzzle. And you will need to do it in enough time so that Brittany will be able to mail the puzzle out to you. And it will take a few business days. So because of this, I will not be able to have the tickets open, you know, just a few days in advance of the event. I'll have to close down the ticket sales in enough time so that Brittany can get the puzzles out to you for the event. So if you know you want to do this, if you know you want to be in a space with other Black women and you know you want to connect with me live and in person, again, go to www.browngirlselfcare.com. Go to the events tab at the top. Scroll down and you will be able to find June's Soul Care Sunday puzzle and sip event, and you can get your ticket there. So that was number one. I hope to see you. The second thing is I want to remind you that if you would like to listen to this episode in entirety, in its entirety, and or you want to actually watch the video, plus you want to have access to bonus Brown Girl Self-Care content, and you want to do it because you want to support the Brown Girl Self-Care platform and community that I am trying to build out for us, then go to patreon.com/Brown Girl Self-Care. Again, that's patreon.com/Brown Girl Self-Care, and show your support for the show so that I can continue to create a safe space for Black women, all right? Okay, so that is it for this week's episode. I appreciate you listening. I hope that you have an amazing week. Continue to prioritize yourself the way that you deserve, and I will see you on the next episode of the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast.